Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo.
Und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur. Und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.
When I was a kid, before they put in the Cumberland Gap Tunnel, there was a horrible and winding road that went over the mountains from Kentucky into Tennessee, pretty much straight through the Cumberland Gap National Historical Park. I can barely remember it, because I was so young when the tunnel was officially opened. 6 or 7? I forget. But there's one stretch of the old road that my brain won't let me forget. Overshadowed by the trees, and built into a jut of rock that caused a kink in the road, there was a door. A normal, average, you'd see it on a house door, with a little brass knob. It always irked me because I was, and still am, very much the type of person who doesn't like not knowing things, and that door became the mystery to end all mysteries. One of the most vivid memories I have about it is the first time I asked what exactly it was, and where it went to, sitting in the back seat of Mom's car while stuck in standstill traffic. While Mom was more concerned about the bumper-to-bumper crunch of cars that couldn't get past the wreck up the way, I was tightly asking about the door, repeatedly, like her initial answer of, I don't know, didn't count. Other people thought they knew. Everyone had an idea, or a theory, or I'd heard somebody talking about knowing somebody who knew someone who'd been in there. I heard a dozen different stories from a dozen different people over the course of my childhood. It's where they hid munitions for World War II. It's where the soldiers hid during the Revolutionary War. It was where bootleggers had once hid their stash. It was where Native Americans had lived before they were driven out of the area. It was an entrance into a cave system that was at the park. Or where they kept the controls for things like lights and cameras. I personally liked my own theory, that there were Neanderthals inside, who stayed up late making cave paintings of horses, which made as much sense as anything else anyone had told me. In time though, the tunnel was finished, and the old road was destroyed. The door was forgotten, like so many other childhood memories, and I became convinced that I had dreamed up the whole thing. It happens. Kids have vivid imaginations, and false memories are pretty common. That was, and so my best friend decided we were going to have a day of fun at the park. Kayla was my polar opposite, the definition of an early 2000s popular preteen. She liked makeup, boys and Britney Spears, and wasn't much of an outdoorsy type. Meanwhile, I was obsessed with Digimon and dirt. We were an unlikely duo whose childhood was spent compromising in weird ways, and the trip to the park was her way of making it up to me for a marathon of preteen chick flicks. She knew I wasn't thrilled about Mary-Kate and Ashley, so she'd take the dive and go catch tadpoles with me as a sort of concession. Hell, it was a double concession since, having hit the age where looks, friends and social etiquette suddenly became to matter, it was pretty obvious that she was becoming more and more hesitant to be seen in public with me. This was probably the reason why, when we got to the park, she specifically asked to be dropped off at a not-so-popular entrance to the trail, rather than my favourite starting point on the Iron Furnace Trail. There was less a chance that one of her crushes or school buddies would catch wind of us, not that they'd be hanging out in the woods anyway. Her grandpa wasn't the keenest on this, since he didn't like the idea of us being so far from people, but she managed to convince him by citing that civilization was literally down the hill from us if something happened. A big hill, sure, but you could technically see the roofs of houses from the road just off the parking lot. He hesitantly agreed and drove away with a sigh, leaving us standing there with a couple of jars for tadpoles and some well wishes. No sooner than his car disappeared back into the road did Kayla turn to me, sigh, and say, "What are we doing now?" I had some ideas. I wasn't as familiar with this stretch of trail than the tried and true route at the Iron Furnace, but I imagined myself some kind of intrepid explorer and figured that, so long as we stayed on the path, there wasn't anything that could go wrong. I also decided against heading in the direction that would have likely led me to the familiar territory, based solely on the fact that I'd never been in the opposite direction and was curious what I'd find. I didn't say anything about this, of course, and just let Kayla think I knew where we were going, since she didn't seem too invested in our adventure or concerned about where we ended up. So, off we went. I think it was about 15 minutes in that Kayla started to get the case of the heebie-jeebies. The woods were denser on the mystery trail I'd decided to take, and even in the bright spring sun, everything was dark and dreary. It was almost like walking in twilight and, if you looked up, you could only barely make out the blue sky if the wind caught the trees in just the right way. She nervously tapped her nails along and shuffled after me, biting her lip and occasionally saying something snarky to mask the fact she was terrified of every creak, crunch, and crash she heard. I was oblivious. I was just excited about a chipmunk I saw. 30 minutes in, and I started to get braver. While Kayla sat on the benches, pockmarking the trail, I'd leave out jars with her and merrily go skipping off the beaten path. She'd nervously watch as I disappeared into the shrubs to look for anything interesting. Bird feathers, snail shells, cool rocks, and other things that I wasn't legally allowed to take, but would stuff into my pockets anyway. With every new venture into the woods, I gained more and more confidence I would venture further and further out. If I got too far, Kayla would yell for me. Insults, usually, about how I was a loser, I was crazy, she hated this, and she wanted to go home. I'd usually follow the sound back to where I began, and given how far out I was wandering, sometimes the sound of her voice was the only thing that would guide me to safety. It wasn't a perfect system, but it worked, and it worked right up until it didn't. To this day, I don't know what it was. Did Kayla stop calling because she was mad at me? Did I just mosey too far out to hear her? Was something else at play? I just know that, at a particular bend in the trail, I dropped off my jars and treasures with Kayla, pressed out into the bushes, and began to walk downhill further and further into the woods in search of something interesting. A part of me knew I was going too far, but I felt this strange compulsion to keep going, like something was calling me from further ahead. So, ahead I went, like a goddamn idiot, stumbling over rocks and getting slapped in the face with branches. When I hit the bottom of the hill, I realized I was standing at the top of a sharp drop down, a rocky jut about the height of a single-story house that was shrouded in darkness from the sheer volume of surrounding trees. If I squinted though, I could make out what rested at the bottom of the fall, and my eyes widened when I saw fading yellow dashes and darkened asphalt. It was a road. Not just any road, but a pretty pristine road that, aside from some cracks in the cement, was still completely drivable, but only for a stretch. I awkwardly climbed down the rocky drop to investigate, and you could only walk along it for about the length of a football field before it gave way to greenery on the other side. It was just some bizarre slice of the modern age plopped right in the middle of the mountains, somehow immune to nature and time. I marveled for a bit before I finally saw the glint of something metallic in the fleeting moment of sunlight. In typical dumb kid fashion, my magpie brain took over and off I went to see what it was that was so shiny. Imagine my surprise when I realized from some yards away that it was a doorknob, just like the one you'd find on a door on your house. Apparently, by some fluke, I'd come out on top of the mystery door from my childhood. I hadn't even noticed it while climbing down to the road, even though it had been right next to me as I scaled and fell down the rocks. My anxiety spiked as I stared down, since, even with my limited knowledge of direction, I knew I should not have been anywhere near this part of the park. I hadn't been on the Cumberland Gap Road since I was very young, but my gut told me that this should have been miles away from where we started, and definitely too far for a preteen to walk on their own in the afternoon. I stood and stared at the door for a good long while before I decided that I'd had enough adventuring for the day. Despite the childhood curiosity I had about what was inside, the whole situation reeked of fish, and my stomach turned at the thought of trying to open it. Inhaling deeply, I opted to instead scramble back up from where I came and play Marco Polo with myself until I heard Kayla respond. If I headed directly left of the outcropping over the door and just kept walking straight, then I was bound to find my way back to... knock, knock, knock. My thoughts froze no sooner than I found a foothold in the stone. Three slow, steady knocks thundered from the other side of the door. My heart found its way to my throat, but my eyes couldn't find their way to the door. My brain was torn as to whether I should look or not. Tap, knock, knock, tap. There was a rhythm to it, like a song or, and I'm going to feel dumb admitting this, the telegraph scene from Balto. I know that sounds absolutely stupid, but as a kid, that was my only real exposure to the idea of Morse code or anything similar. In a moment of panic, I stood there, frozen, trying to see if my exposure to a 90s cartoon movie had turned me into an expert. Tap. Hell, I didn't even know if it was Morse code. The more I stood there, the more it started sounding like somebody just trying to get out of a room after they'd locked themselves inside. Knock. Tap. I stumbled at the force of the knock and let out a yelp. Everything fell silent. Even the birds in the trees. Frozen on my ass on the road in the middle of the woods, I gawked at the door. Tears began to well in my eyes. This was some scary tales to tell in the dark stuff, and I was not having it. Hello? A voice, small and familiar, warbled from the other side. Rapid tapping accompanied it, like dog claws skittering across a linoleum floor. Standing up and brushing my butt off, I started trying to clamber up the rocks again. Hello? Erin? The voice knew my name, and it hit me like a ton of bricks that the reason it sounded familiar is that it sounded like Kayla. The cadence was all wrong though, like listening to a parrot talk. The door, or whatever was on the other side of it, mastered the sound, but not the method. Erin, where did you go? You went so far, I looked for you. Foothold found, I hoisted myself up, using tree roots and rocks and anything that'd support my weight. A part of me was hurt to leave Kayla behind, but I couldn't get over the weird rhythm of its speech. Besides, there was no way that she could have gotten ahead of me, right? There's no way she'd even come out into the woods, right? She was scared of the actual trail, let alone the wilderness beyond it. Erin, you left. You went so far in. Erin, where did you go? Erin, I'm scared. It's dark. Erin? Erin? I hit the top of the incline and pulled myself up, panting and dirty with sore palms and mud in my mouth. Every muscle in my body trembled from a mixture of exhaustion and fear, and I lingered a bit too long, overlooking the door. It took me a moment to realize the door had stopped talking, and it took me an even longer moment to realize the tapping had stopped. However, it took me no time at all to realize that the sound of creaking hinges was probably a bad sign. Erin, are you there? Erin? The voice was clearer now, and when I squinted down onto the dark road, I saw the vaguest hint of a silhouette slinking out of a crack in the door. It was humanoid, I guess, but not human. there were too many odd angles and thin extremities to count it as human. Granted, I also didn't take too much time to try figure out what it was, since I'd seen enough horror movies to know that the ones who gawk the longest die first. I did catch a glimpse of it whipping around to look at me, oversized puppy dog eyes watching as I vanished into the woods. First quietly, and then with increasing volume as I heard it scampering after me. Shrieking like a banshee, I ripped through the underbrush and screamed Kayla's name at the top of my lungs. I waited for her to yell back to me, but I only heard a voice coming from behind me, desperate and broken. "Erin, it's dark. I'm scared. It's dark, Erin. Erin, you went too far. I can't see you. Want to go home, Erin?" My lungs burned as I pushed myself uphill, faster and harder than a kid should ever have to go. My heart thumped against my eardrums, and my legs felt like jelly underneath me. Every time I stumbled, I imagined that thing gaining on me, and barely stopped to gauge how hurt I was before scrambling off again. Sometimes, I made it a good ways on all fours, hunched over and trying to use my arms to pull myself ahead when my legs threatened to give out. And the whole time, the chorus of, "Erin, Erin," chimed behind me, beside me, above me. I just kept screaming out for Kayla, hoping that she'd hear my panic and answer me back. In my heart, I knew I could tell the difference between her and that thing, since she'd actually sound like a human being. At first, that's what I told myself, as I recklessly tore my way ahead. As I crested the hill, I found myself going downhill again, and I let gravity carry me the rest of the way. The voice behind me became more distant the faster I moved, quieter and quieter, as if fading from existence itself. And I thought I would too, when my feet finally went completely numb and I fell, hard, over a tree root. I felt my nose pop and the world spin as I tumbled down and down, finally coming to rest with a grunt on soft dirt that was strangely devoid of leaves. I opened one eye and saw the edge of a wooden bench. On top of it was a couple of jars full of snail shells and bird feathers. Standing next to it, staring at me in horror, was Kayla. She immediately fell down next to me in a flurry of, "Oh my God," and, "Are you okay?" I was pretty sure God had abandoned me, and I was far from okay. So I numbly stared at her until I realized I hadn't broken any bones and could probably get up. She shakily hoisted me to my feet and began to fuss over my nose. It was bloody. My clothes, they were a mess. And my hair, it was full of leaves. She pointed at fresh bruises and cuts and asked what I'd done. And I was too shell-shocked to answer, aside from some paranoid glances over my shoulder. "Oh my God, Erin. Erin, you went so far out and I couldn't see you anymore. It was dark. I was scared. I've just been yelling for you this whole time. How did you end up coming from uphill? Are you okay? I was so scared. Oh my God, I wanted to go look for you, but what if we both got lost? Oh my God, let's go home. Let's go home. I want to go home. This is stupid." We left the jars. She led the way back. The half-hour hike felt like an eternity, but not nearly as long as the amount of time we sat on the benches in the parking lot, waiting for our ride to come get us. We didn't really talk, and if we did, I don't really remember what was said. I can easily imagine her ranting to the side of my head out of worry and anger, because that's how she was, and it would have been completely justified. But my mind was too fixated on the door, the thing, my pulse, how much I didn't want to sit with my back to the woods, but at the same time, I didn't want to worry Kayla by making her think something was more wrong than I'm an idiot who fell down a hill. I just stared pointlessly ahead until I saw her grandpa pull up. Of course, he wasn't happy with either of us. We should have taken the iron furnace trail. I shouldn't have gone wandering into the woods. My mom was going to kill him for not watching us. I ignored most of it because I had more important things to worry about, and it was a relatively quiet ride back home. But as I got out of the car in front of my house, Kayla grabbed my wrist to keep me from wandering too far. Out of earshot of her grandpa, whispering like a town gossip, she asked me why I'd been messing with her while I was in the woods. I told her I hadn't. Her face went pale. "Oh," she said. "Because it sounded like you, sort of. They were saying they had something neat to show me down the hill. Said they'd found a door in the mountain."
Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo
und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.